comes way at night. Many a moon coming, shine a light.
Welcome to Paris Cocktail Talk, the podcast brought to you by the 52 Martinis blog that covers cocktail and spirits news and topics with a focus on French trends and ingredients. For today's episode, we are talking rum. In just a few days, Rum Fest is kicking off from 2 to 4 April, and it's the annual Rum Expo. And this year they've added a Rum Week, which is going to be fun. So from 28 March to 4th April, various bars across the city will be featuring rum drink specials. So I thought it would be really nice to talk to a few experts to get us prepared for the fun in store next week. It's also maybe a good time to remind you that in one of the previous podcasts, we interviewed Joseph Acquevin of Mabel, which is a dedicated rum bar. So if you don't get enough info from this one, you might want to go back and listen to some of the prior podcasts. This week, we'll be talking to Luca Gargano of the Maison Velier about his new pure single rum range and his thoughts on rum categories and rum in general. We'll also be speaking to Alexandre Vintier, who, among other things, is co-founder and editor-in-chief of Rum Porter. So I think that you will get some good information, and by the time you're done listening, you'll really be ready for that rum week.
So I'm here at the restaurant Gare au Gourir, and I am with Luca Gargano of the Maison Velier. And we're here and we're tasting a selection of the rum from the Habitation Collection Verrier. And so we're going to ask him some questions here in the run-up to Rum Fest. We thought it would be really nice to have a chance to catch up with him. So thank you, Luca, for taking a few minutes to speak to me. That was a really enjoyable tasting. Can you tell the listeners a little bit what you were talking about earlier, about the four classifications of rum and where this range falls in that?
Yes, I think that in the rum there are a lot of confusion. It's like if in the whiskey, Macallan is in the same category of Ballantine. So apart the difference between agricole rum and the molasses rum, there is not a classification to understand, for instance, the type of distillation. So my proposal is a classification in four categories. One is pure single rum, 100% distilled in pot still. The second is a single blended, means rum coming only from one distillery, but a blend of column plus pot still. The third are the traditional rum, distilled in continuous column, traditional, like coffee still of Colon Creole. For instance, Rum Agricole is in this category. Mm-hmm. And the fourth category is rum. Then there are flavored rums and other things, but the four main categories. And I think the Scottish, 50 years ago, in 1965, when they created the pure single rum, pure single malt category, and pure single malt is 100% pot still distillation, they were really in the avant-garde. And today, rum have also a classification.
So is this something that you're pushing for in general as we discuss it, or is this something that we're looking at legislation that's going to be changed to actually create this, or is a discussion that we're having?
No, this legislation is impossible. You know, rum is produced everywhere, yeah, in the tropics. I think it could be a good guideline among the professional and rum lovers to have a certain transparency. And a pure single rum, not necessarily is better than a single blended, but it's important to know where it comes from. All the cognac come from pot still, all the Basse Armagnac come from pot still or from special stills. In the whiskey, it's possible to have continuous column and pot still, and they have a classification. So I think the rum needs the same classification adapted to this category.
And what do you feel about, because on the show we talk a lot about how particular topics apply to France. So I know you were talking earlier about how things are possibly changing. In France, they had certain ways of drinking rum, and that might be changing now. Can you talk about that a little bit, about the French and their relationship to rum?
Yes, I know. I think that many, many centuries, or surely for many, many years, all the 20 centuries, the French people drank rum coming from their colonies, and the same the British, and the same the Spanish. Now we are in a different moment. There is a multicultural world, and so in the last years the French start to drink rum coming from other regions, the same as Spanish, the same as the English, and this is very positive for the rum business.
Yeah, I think so too. I do. What do you think made that change happen?
Surely the new generation, they travel a lot, they go to make university in different countries, the internet,
it's hard for
social network
to stay,
and everything. When I started my activity in the 70s, I was a nomad, an explorer, and when I started in the 90s to import Brugal from the Dominican Republic, Santa Teresa from Venezuela, no 1% of the rum lovers knew these rums. Today, with the internet, you can tape Caribbean rum, and all the rums come.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you want to tell the listeners about this range that we're trying tonight?
Oh, yes, I create this brand, Habitation Velier, and in these bottles, I put only rum coming from a double distillation in pot still. So our pot still rums, 100%. And I think is a good avant-garde in the rum business. Last thing, I will tell something about my last love, that is Haiti, with a Clairin. I think Haiti could be, is a world rum heritage, because they still have 532 stills working. All the Caribbean have only 49 distilleries working, and Haiti has 532 stills. And Haiti is really a great place for rum lovers.
Good to know. Good to know for my next vacation spot. One more thing I'm going to ask you. You were talking about the percentage of alcohol and the importance, or not the importance, but your preference for having a higher percentage in the bottle. So can you tell the listeners just a little bit about why you prefer a higher percentage?
Well, I prefer the cask strength. I think that when a spirit lives for 5, 10, 15 years in a barrel, find its harmony, and so when you bottle, the best expression is at cask strength. Then you can add the water in your glass, drink some water with your rum, but I prefer that the consumer can put his water without paying the water, instead of selling the water inside the bottle.
Yeah, that's what I appreciated about what you said, so that's good to know. I won't take up more of your time, because it looks like you've got a busy evening and lots of people want to speak to you, but thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me, and thank you for this lovely tasting as well.
Thank you very much to you. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao. So I'm here with Alexandre Vintier, and we're really lucky that he had some time to speak with us this week. He is co-founder and editor-in-chief of Rum Porcher, and he's a pretty formidable presence on the cocktail and spirits scene here in Paris. If you've been to any cocktail salon, cocktail spirit, the Paris Cocktail Festival, Omnivore, you've probably seen him on stage presenting the presenters. So he's got his fingers in a lot of pies when it comes to cocktails and spirits here. And he's got a lot to say about the subject. So I'm really excited. Thank you, Alexandre, for coming and speaking to me.
Thank you.
So can we start off really basic? I just want to tell the listeners, what is rum? What's it made from? And we're not looking at a big masterclass here. Just give them an idea, because I think sometimes people appreciate a spirit, but they don't really know what they're drinking.
Yeah, and that's actually the best and the best question and the main issue concerning rum is to define rum. Rum is any spirit based on a sugarcane product. So that can be the juice, raw fresh juice for agriculture, for instance. It can be syrup, like they do in many Latin American countries. It can be also molasses, so the residual of the sugar factory. But it can be other products as well. Mm-hmm. It can be some special sugars as well. It can be what's called high test molasses, which is direct molasses produced from the juice, mm-hmm. without the sugar industry involved. And it can be dehydrated sugarcane juice. So it can be many things. But it cannot be any other type of sugar. So it cannot be sorghum sugar, mm-hmm. or molasses. And it cannot be sugar beet molasses as well.
I feel like globally, rum has, over the past several years, been getting more attention, and more specifically here in France. Do you think that the relationship between French and rum has been changing, has been not improving, but do you think it's been getting more publicity lately?
Yeah, I mean, globally we see a very good trend for rum for the last 15 years, let's say. And I think that, yes, there is a global competition with lots of big actors like Bacardi, Captain Morgan, Havana Club, which is there for a bit more than 20 years. And competition is good. So you see, even in countries where rum wasn't popular, some people know it. There is rum festival even in Japan, where mm-hmm. rum is totally unknown. But still, it's growing even in those countries. France is another country because we are not a big producer, but we are a specific and traditional producer. We produce rum for nearly 400 years now. So we have a very long relationship, as do the British and the Spaniards. But the market has been driven very differently from market to another. For instance, if you see UK is not a good market at the moment for rum. It's been big in the 90s, maybe, as it was new rum appearing, like Appleton, which is now very obvious on any market for any bartenders. But actually, the rum market there is decreasing. They have Rum Fest for nearly 10 years and so on, but the rum culture isn't getting so popular. Mm-hmm. I think it's maybe stay in a corner.
Right.
Yes, the industry is involved, but there is so much competition with other spirits and so on, that even though there is a big Caribbean community and so on, rum is decreasing. So that's a big issue. On the other part, if you look, United States is totally different because it grew up very fast, in value and volume, and now, well, it's still a good market. It's not growing anymore, but it's a good market. But that's more because they invented a lot of flavored rum, and they mostly have light rum made for cocktails. So some rum even are marketed like vodka. Mm-hmm. France is very, very different. The French industry, rum industry, recovered from the 90s, which were very difficult in terms of volume. And now the market is growing, both in volume and value. So it's the third category in France after whiskey, which is obviously already 40% of the market. Anise spirits, 20%. And the rum is close to 10% of the market now.
What about rum agricole? Is that more prevalent in France? I feel like when you go to just your standard bar, they're more likely to just have rum agricole on the shelf. So what's the relationship there?
So rum agricole is something that, so basically it's rum made from a pure sugarcane juice, fresh juice, not cooked, because some other country might use cooked juice. So it's fresh, which is just fermented and distilled in column, but small column. So it's more an image of the fermented juice. So you can talk about terroir, cane varieties and so on. Vintage, if you want, also it's like a wine culture in a way, and French are really proud of that, and that's what is heavily promoted even in supermarkets and so on, yes, with Saint James and Clément and other Damoiseau from Guadeloupe and so on. So you find Agricole on all the four French overseas you say region, I would say, not territories. The territories cannot call it Rome, Agricole. That's another issue, but they also make it now. So the thing with Agricole is we think that France isn't only producing early Agricole. Actually, we are producing more molasses rum than Agricole. It's like 55% molasses rum, 45% Agricole. So that means that's a bit above 20 million liters of Agricole, around 50%, and a bit more than 25 million for molasses, because we are still a big sugar producer. And that's the specificity also, is that our molasses rum are not industrial rum, technically speaking. They are sugar factory rum, which is totally different, because the molasses doesn't travel, so it doesn't need to be so stable. At the other country, we need, for instance, Bacardi is purchasing molasses from 14 countries, from two or three different continents. So the molasses needs to be very stable.
Right.
That's not the case when you have the sugar factory next to the distillery. Or better, the sugar factory owns the distillery.
Right.
Like Appleton, for instance, in Jamaica. So we do the rum agricole, and we do this molasses, but traditional molasses rum. Yeah. And so agricole is very, very unique, because yes, we can speak about vintage and so on. So it's another rum. It's like calling, I know in the US they fought for a long time to have cachaça and caipirinha recognized, really, and not have to mention all the time Brazilian rum. It's rum agricole and molasses rum, it's two worlds apart.
Yeah, they taste completely different.
A funny thing is that in Guadeloupe, for instance, they do something which is very interesting locally. They didn't want to put it in the geographic indication, even though I tried to. But you cannot win on everything. But what they do is that they do mix of agricole and molasses rum.
Oh, okay.
And they bottle it, age it, and sell it like that.
Yeah.
And actually, that's excellent.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. It's like mixing single malt with grain whiskey, actually.
Right. When we talk about rum, can we talk about a terroir for rum, depending on where, I don't know, the sugar's grown, that type of thing, like we can with other spirits?
Yes, I think we can talk about terroir as long as you use local product. So you can speak of terroir with pure sugar cane juice, fresh juice, like agricole, and you can talk about terroir with some of the traditional molasses rum. So if you take the one from Guyana or from Jamaica and so on, they produce their own molasses, so, or their own syrup for Dominican Republic and so on, or Guatemala and so on. So you can speak about a terroir because you have total control over the raw material you're using to ferment and distill. The specificity with agricole, and it can be also said from some Clairin of Haiti or some Cachaça in Brazil, which are also rum. Huh? They are just different rums, like but they are in the same family, maybe. And you can speak about terroir because you're using something which is part of our total fresh. Juice. So what they call it is not, they are not, they don't call it fermented cane juice, they call it wine, technically. Okay. In France, any wine, it can be any wine, except cider, but all the rest is wine. So we do a wine that we distill, and when we distilled this wine, we use an apparatus that only takes a picture of the wine. And that's the idea. That's a bit like, that's why the column is necessary, and that's a bit like Armagnac. You take a picture of the wine. So you take a picture from the quality mm-hmm. of your cane varieties. So yes, you have different cane varieties, so they have different tastes, different maturity also, and so on. So there is a terroir, definitely. It's not a very, very long tradition. Yeah? Agricole doesn't, exist really on a relevant scale for 150 years only.
Okay.
It's not the origin of Rome, but you can really see the differences from the north of Martinique to the south, from the east to the west, because you have the Caribbean Sea on one side and the Atlantic Ocean on the other. So different cane come at different maturity. Mm-hmm. So the peak of maturity is not the same on the Atlantic shore. That mm-hmm. would be mid-April, when it is maybe mid-March on the Caribbean shore. So there's really discrepancies. And you have to adapt your cane varieties to your soil and your climate. Mm-hmm. So, and you're not only, of course, for the moment, we are mostly looking for yield. That's the main issue with sugarcane. Mm-hmm. When you grow sugarcane, you're looking for high yield, but now some people try to change a little and think also, yes, you have to produce a lot of alcohol, mm-hmm. but it has also to be quality. So there is a more and more focus on organoleptic qualities mm-hmm. of the sugarcane varieties.
So
that's very new.
Will a high yield reduce the quality of the finished product?
The question. For the high yield would say, yes, let's have the maximum sugar level you can have mm-hmm. in a sugar cane. It can work for some terroir, but not for some other.
Okay.
Definitely, the Caribbean islands and some other countries are in the perfect situation on the map mm-hmm. to have very high yield. It's much more difficult if you're in Georgia or in south of Spain and so on, because the yields are much lower. But the thing also is that there's many research also now on the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So some producers try to use more and more natural yeast. Of course, you have to start with some yeast and you have to control. But you see some example, like some of the Clairin, the one which are commercialized in Europe, so Sajous, Vaval, and Casimir. The idea here is to have no industrial yeast coming at any moment. So you don't, it's not even the Dunder style or something like this from Jamaica, it's totally natural.
Okay.
The thing is that, yes, you have I think it's better to have a cane at full maturity. But you have to harvest your cane from January to June.
Okay.
So it's like making wine every day, because as soon as you harvest your sugar cane, you have to press them, you have to extract the juice, and the juice starts to ferment as soon as it gets out. So you have to control everything. It's even worse than wine making for some part. And then you have to distill all the time. So every day is a new challenge for agricole, and so that's why also you use very, very efficient yeast.
Okay.
Like this, you don't have competition with bacteria and so on, and as you cannot sometimes have enough fermenting tanks, you use faster mm-hmm. fermentation. So that means 24 hours. Sometimes it can, some producers, not for agricole, but in other country, I think they can go down to 18 hours, which is extremely fast.
Okay.
Even in the whiskey industry and so on, usually it's two days.
Right.
So some people say, yeah, if you do very fast, that's very efficient, and you really take the picture of the juice, maybe. If you go a bit longer, 2, 3, 4, 5 days, then you have more secondary aromas. So
okay.
You take a picture of your terroir,
right.
Not only of your sugar cane. And then if you go beyond that, like some Clairin, that's another world. Because then you're not only taking your terroir, or you include some bacteria and mushroom in your terroir.
Okay.
Because that's what's going to work. It's not only a classic fermentation, So it's not only Saccharomyces, it's pseudo-Saccharomyces that will work. So they will transform part of the sugar into glycerin.
Okay.
And this glycerin will attract bacteria and mushrooms to create other flavors. So you lose a little bit in yield in alcohol, but you have much more flavor.
Yeah.
But it can be faulty flavor as well. That's the trick.
It's complicated. I have noticed lately that there's some discussion about adding sugar to rum, and it seems like there's two different camps on this. Something from Alexandre Gabriel of Plantation saying that it's okay to add sugar to rum. It's similar to what we do to champagne with dosage. And then his name is Richard Seal, right? On the other side saying, no, it's not good. Adding sugar masks faults sometimes in the spirit. Do you have an opinion on this? Do you think it's a worthwhile discussion, or do you think it's just something that has popped up and people have grabbed hold of as something to discuss?
Well, first thing is that we have our ears at the European Commission, and we published it already in Rum Porter, so it will be. There will be a definition on the sugar level, and it should be between 15 to 20 grams per liter.
Okay.
That's the level that will be soon in European regulation. For the moment, there is no regulation, which is strange because most of the spirits are regulated in terms of sugar level. Cognac is 16 grams maximum. Rum Agricole is 8 grams, but usually it's zero,
okay.
Technically. Yes, I think whiskey should be zero. But not all whiskey are zero,
okay.
So they shouldn't be named whiskey. That's the issue. Because some of the, if you see the global perspective, so rum can be the sweetest spirit. I'm not talking about liquors. Liquors is 80, 100 grams, but you can see rum at 40 grams per liter. Black Zacapa, 23 Solera 23, which was considered 10 years ago for some people one of the best or the best rum in the world, and so on. Now you see the big craze for Diplomatico Reserva Exclusiva in France. The same, 40% level of gram per liter. So that's pretty high. But those rums still have, how do you say, a spinal, a backbone, something to build on. Of course, if you put, like Richard Seale does, vodka, caramel, sugar, and people think it's rum, there's an issue.
Right.
So the thing is that, yes, it should be regulated, but then I think sugar can be in rum. I don't want rum to be the scotch of the rum. I don't know why we should apply a Western vision on the traditional rums, because there is a long tradition for that. Some people add sugar at the end of aging, some at the start.
Okay.
Like Barboncourt, they start with 7 grams of sugar, some other add at the end, and so on. So there is something involved in that. As long as it's still sugar cane.
Right. Now, what's the difference if you add it at the beginning or the end? What does that change?
It changes everything.
Ah.
Age your syrup. You can age your syrup, you will see the difference. Anything you age is better. No. In cognac, you age the spirit, you age the syrup, you age the boisé also.
Right.
So some of this wood extract, because those casks are very expensive. We are not talking about second hand American oak. And we also age the water. Why? Because it makes everything smoother.
Okay.
And if you take very old syrup or very old boisé, so some can be years old. We can take even more than decades old. The quality is amazing, and you cannot put just sugar in a 15 years old spirit like that, and it won't taste really good, unless it's a very light spirit. If it's very light, it doesn't have much to say. So, to give it a little more, you add some sugar in it. But then, The idea is already we have an issue with the color because we can use caramel in any spirit nearly, and the consumer thinks the darker it is, the older it is, the better it is, the more I will put money in it. And so as most of the rum are pretty dark already, so to increase this smoothness quality, we use sugar. So that's the issue. Mm-hmm. Another thing also in the rum industry is that rum is should be in European standard only based on sugarcane, but some rum are flavored, so some are called rum arrangé or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We have spiced rum. There is no regulation for that, so technically it doesn't exist in Europe.
Right.
It's spirit drink based on rum. Okay. If you look at Bacardi Ocart, it's written spirit drink. Spiced rum doesn't exist as a category in Europe. So Captain Morgan and Diageo are pushing this category, but it doesn't exist. It's not in the... I don't know how and why they are putting the word rum on it.
So legally, they shouldn't be putting the word rum on it. Interesting.
European law says it. Hmm. So that's an issue, you know. You're introducing new things and you just look like... There is no regulation for that. Rum is only that. It's not what the words you put after or before it won't change a thing. There is a regulation. Rum is rum. But there is also, as I said, old traditions. We know with Methuselah that there was a trial in the US. They were using vanilla and prune and so on and so on. Because two parts of the family fought in American court, and then we discovered they were adding something. But the recipe dates back to what, the middle of the 19th century. So that's before the first regulation on rum. So they defined what rum was.
Right.
And actually, Methuselah was the most popular rum in the golden age of Cuba.
Mm.
So. That's very strange, you know.
Yeah.
How can you apply such a modern and westernized point of view on some rum? Some other big producers do also flavor their rum, but we shouldn't mention it.
Okay.
You know, that's the thing. Rum is it's a long tradition, so we should teach those tradition and we should respect them. And then for me, it's like we can recognize with the European Union and so on, we have a mutual recognition of appellation of origin. So yeah, if they build something like a geographic indication for them and recognize them, then they can do it. Like we are doing for Guatemala.
Right.
Guatemalan rum can be flavored and we recognize it. So...
For listeners who are new to rum and they want to learn about it, they want to discover it, what do you recommend? Do you recommend starting off with a particular brand, a particular region, going to a rum bar like Mabel, going to... What would you say if I said, I don't know anything about rum, but I'd like to start learning. Tell me what to do.
It's a pity. My book wasn't translated yet in English, which was a 101 rum to discover. Now it's 120. So for me, the idea is first to have a good picture of what rum can be. Because as we have spoken about, the problem is... Rum can be many things. It can be dry, it can be semi-sweet, extremely sweet, it can be flavored or not, it can be aged or not, or it can be aged then charcoal filtered, so it looks white but it's aged. Bacardi, Havana Club for instance, they are white aged rum, and that's the issue. It can be 37.5% in Europe minimum, or it can be overproof rum or navy strength or anything. So it's very, very difficult to say. Yeah, agricole, molasses, syrup, it's very, very difficult. So the idea is more, of course, to take the opportunity to go to places such as Mabel, but also some shops or the Rum Fest, of course, and all the events linked to rum, and try. Okay. Just try. Don't judge, try. Say, don't, it's not because someone else said this is bad, you won't like it, you shouldn't try. No, try rum. Rum, that's the main quality of rum. It can be so many things. It can be close to vodka, it can be flavored, It can be spiced. Mm-hmm. It can be so old. So it can appeal to cognac drinkers, whiskey drinkers, gin drinkers, vodka drinkers, any drinkers. Okay. That's fantastic. Then you have the punch and the rhum arrangé and so on. You see now that actually other categories are copying rum. Mm. You see, of course, more and more flavored vodka, but that was traditional in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. But then you see more and more of those. You see now spiced whiskey and so on, flavored whiskey and so on. So rum inspired a lot of the other categories, and I think that's makes it very attractive. And it will help you to understand also the full spectrum of the whole spirit aromas and techniques like distillation, raw materials, maturation, and so on.
I'm going to wrap it up because I think that we're going to run out of time. But I also wanted to make mention of, so you mentioned already the book that you wrote about rum. Sorry, remind me again the title.
So the new edition is 120 Rums.
Okay, 120 Rums, and that's in French.
For the moment, only in French.
And then also, not too long ago, you completed a book on whiskey as well, correct?
Yes, my second book on whiskey. But the first one to be published in English.
Ah, very good. So I'll put links in the show notes. So if any listeners want to check out these books, they can. So you'll be able to find that on the website. Alexandre, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me today. And I will probably be seeing you at Rumfest.
Of course.
All right. Thanks.
See you soon.
So I hope all of that listening made you thirsty, because now it's cocktail time. I'm adding a new segment to the end of each episode where we'll be featuring a cocktail that ties into the show's theme. It's been really easy this time because there's really a lot of rum drinks that are great. For this episode, I'd really like to highlight something that's not the usual daiquiri, not the mojito, but it's still a classic. It's something that's easy enough to make at home. It's something that is really good for featuring rum. And it's something that you can customize a bit according to your personal tastes. I am talking about the Planter's Punch. The Planter's Punch has been around for decades, and it's seen a few different variations during that time. But for this episode, I'm going to be sharing the recipe, which is David Wondrich's take on the Trader Vic's recipe as he wrote for Esquire. So you want to take, first, 90 milliliters of dark rum, preferably Jamaican, 30 mils of freshly squeezed lime juice, 15 mils of freshly squeezed lemon juice, 15 mils of grenadine, and I'm going to put in the show notes a few links on where you can go to find information about making your own grenadine at home, because trust me, it's really, really worth it if you do, and it's really easy to do as well. And additionally, you'll take a quarter teaspoon of fine sugar. You want to stir all of these ingredients with ice, and then you'll strain it into a tall glass full of cracked ice. And that's it. Voila. You can garnish it as you like. You can put a little umbrella on it, stick some fruit in there. Really, go crazy. Do as you like. Just enjoy it. And with that, we bring today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening, and a big thanks again to Luca and Alexandre for taking the time to speak with me. We'll put links to their projects in the show notes. And as usual, a big thanks to Sun Little for the use of his song, The River, as our show music. And special thanks to Emily Dilling, who edits and produces the podcast. If you're looking for more cocktail talk between episodes, don't forget to check out the blog, www.52martinis.com. And we really want to cover things that our listeners want to hear, so we always put a place in the show notes where you can also send in questions or ideas for future episodes. Until then, cheers! Cheers!